Want to introduce everyone. Got it. I want to introduce everyone to Lancer Seaman. We're continuing our leadership series here at Scale with Lancer. Our focus is going to be on all things IT, data, software related within the context, obviously, of healthcare services, MSOs, and PPMs. And we think Lancer is about as deep and as broad as it gets in this space, which is it's quite difficult, rare, unusual to find. It's quite fragmented and very difficult to understand given all the technical complexities, all the acronyms. It remains somewhat opaque to those of us who haven't grown up as computer programmers. So we really are in good company today. Lancer, do you want to quickly say hello and maybe a little bit of background on yourself for the group?
Yes. So thanks, everybody, for joining today. As far as background goes, I've been a healthcare CIO for about 15 or a little over 30 years and about 15 years as head of security at multiple organizations. Not to date myself too much, but I began working with computers back when the CPM compact luggables were the thing, you know, 45 pounds carrying around. That was our idea of a laptop at the time. So I've been around for quite a while in IT. It was before the original IBM PC came on the market. I started off in sales and quickly moved into outside sales, focusing specifically on networking and accounting sales. That was back when Banyan Vines and Novell ruled the world with ARPANET and AppleTalk. So it was long before Ethernet was even thought of. I left the sales organization to start my own company. We focused primarily on large hospitals. Stanford University was one of our accounts. Sierra Nevada Memorial Hospital. This was all on the West Coast. And banks. So U.S. Bank was a large part of what we did. So we managed a lot of their networking, and deployed a lot of their systems in the beginning. We sold that company off after a few years, and then I went to work for one of my clients, Innovative Health Systems. They were a large startup. So they started off with about three people in somebody's basement. And when I joined them, there were 15. When I left, there were well over $100 million a year. And we sold that company to a software development firm. So I went from sales to software development. We sold that company to 3M, left there and went to work for a group called Practice Management Partners, which was really an MSO. So we managed a little over 60 medical practices across the country, some very large, 40, 50 locations, some small, one or two doctors, but all had the same problems, right? They needed somebody to manage their IT, they needed billing, and they needed assistance in how to run the practice efficiently because they were doctors and they wanted to focus on the patient. They weren't necessarily great business people, so that's where we came in to help. We later sold that organization off to NextGen Healthcare, the EMR vendor, and I was there for about 4 years and then left to go to work for Rothman Orthopedics. So left the software development side and then went to the heart of where medicine is practiced, to a medical practice itself. Rothman, when I joined, had about 8 locations. We expanded that to 42. We tripled the size of the organization in 5 years, and did a lot of really, really fun things. So we built out an entire platform based on the data, pulling data from multiple different things, and eventually sold that part of the functionality, marketed it, did some great things as far as optimization of the organization. So I left Rothman about 8 months ago, and been doing some side work for Scale Health and Deliver Health ever since. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Thank you, Lancer. So I want to focus in on Rothman for a second. And I think you spent almost 9 years there. How does the Rothman IT platform differentiate itself from other MSOs to the best of your knowledge? What does it do particularly well that others haven't quite mastered yet?
So physician burnout is, you know, one of the key things in the industry right now. It's one of the things we talk about a lot, you know, how to make things more efficient for the physicians, take less time for them. So our goal was to make it so that we added zero time to the physician's day. When I joined Rothman, Dr. Rothman pulled me in his office and he drilled into me the fact that he sees 40 to 60 patients a day. And if we added 1 minute to any of those encounters, that's an extra hour that he doesn't get to spend with his family. And so everything that we did, whether it was a platform-wise, policy-wise, process-wise, was all focused around the physician, how to optimize the systems to assist them, as opposed to requiring more time. So whether that was implementing software in the call center so that it would automatically take calls, answer the calls, assist the patients, or from a physician's perspective, using AI technology in the background to be able to generate reports, pull information and present it to the physician. Everything we did was, in essence, to optimize the physician's experience so that they could spend time with the patient as opposed to spending time with technology.
Understood. And along the way, all the experiences that you've had, have you been asked to provide insight on IT as it pertains to due diligence, the potential investment into a new practice or MSO? And if so, how do you think about IT due diligence?
Yeah, so as I mentioned with Rothman, we grew it three times the size within 5 years.
What was the ultimate size in terms of number of providers when you left?
Over 200.
Got it. And,
200 physicians. And if you consider extenders, it was well over 400. When I started, I think we had 58 physicians. So
that's a lot of growth.
Yeah, so it was a tremendous amount of growth in a very short period of time. So the way that we handled growth, especially from an acquisition perspective, was we would send a team of three people in. We would pretend that we were efficiency experts trying to help the practice out. My job was to evaluate their technology and their people around technology. We had somebody, Josephine, who was responsible for reviewing the operations, how they did things, where physicians were, how long they spent, from a front desk perspective, how did they handle patients, how quickly could they process them, how many patients per hour, taking a look at all of those. So from a pre-closed due diligence perspective, the things that I looked at were three things: risk, capability, and cost. So within those three areas, we looked at people, process, and technology. So from a people perspective, we wanted to see how many people they have in IT. Do they have the right number? Do they have too many, too few? Do they have the right knowledge? And then from a risk perspective, do they have redundancy of that knowledge? The majority of the practices that we would go into, they would only have one or two IT people, very siloed information. And the challenge there is anytime there's an acquisition, a lot of people leave the organization. We wanted to make sure that if those individuals left, that there was knowledge within the group to be able to continue to run and operate. The IT people typically know where the skeletons are buried. So our job was to try to get that information and get it quickly. Then from a process perspective, it's, do they know where their assets are? Many practices you'd go into and they'd say, oh yeah, our old EMR, it's sitting under Suzanne's desk, which is never a good thing, right? From a data perspective. Do they know where their assets are? How secure are they? Do they have redundancy built into it? And then how do they manage them? Personal devices, are personal devices allowed onto the network? So from a risk perspective, looking at it from that, and then also from a compliance perspective, are they HIPAA compliant from a connectivity perspective? Are they emailing and texting patients directly? How do they protect their data? Do they encrypt it? Do they know where their data is? All of it, whether that's in the cloud or local. And then we would look at business continuity. So if something failed, would they be able to continue to run the operations throughout the day? And from a disaster recovery, if something happened, malware event or something like that, would they be able to recover, and how long would that take? So our real goal there was to assess from a risk perspective, what are we as an organization getting ourselves into, and how can we best integrate what they have with what we have? So how far off are their policies and procedures to ours? Some practices that we met with, their policies and processes were very, very different from what we did. And they chose not to adopt our policies. And anytime that would occur, we would simply pass on the opportunity with that organization. It was very important for us to make sure that all of the policies and all of the processes were similar, or at least similar enough to be able to integrate them at some point. We then take a look at...
That's a very interesting point in terms of philosophy on variance, right? Passing on an opportunity to invest based on the understanding that it would require an acceptance of variance, significant variance on a go-forward basis. You find a lot of platforms don't make that decision. So that's interesting that you really prioritize centralization above all else. But don't let me interrupt you. Keep going.
Yeah. And to your point, culture was a huge thing. We would evaluate kind of the culture of the organization. One practice that we went into, they had a physician who would walk barefoot throughout the entire organization. That didn't fit our model of what we wanted to present to our patients. And so, you know, we had to work with that physician, counsel him, and ultimately he decided that not wearing shoes during the day was more important than joining our organization. And so he didn't. So it worked on both sides. Sometimes we felt that they wouldn't integrate. Sometimes they felt that they wouldn't integrate. So being able to pass on those opportunities was key to bringing in organizations that would be successful during the transition.
So note to anyone and everyone on this call, if you're not wearing shoes like me, spend the next 30 seconds, go grab some slippers. So just thinking about this due diligence, I'm very curious. How accurate was your forecasting on the difficulties of integration from a timeline perspective, from a cost, from a disruption? How accurate was that forecasting as it related to EMR integration, practice management billing integration, cloud, data storage integration, call center integration, and other technologies? Did you find that you had sort of a 90% success rate on forecasting, or was it more what we see time and time again, which is it's a lot of trial and error and a lot of heartache in the process?
And that's a great question. Early on, obviously, where we had not done it to a significant number, there were challenges. So the first one was a little rocky. The second one was much better. And by the time we hit the third acquisition, it was incredibly smooth, and we were able to move forward very quickly. Some of the things that we learned along the way were with regards to making the choice of, do we integrate them or do we allow them to stay on their own platforms? What we found to work the very best and to optimize them as quickly as possible was to shift them entirely off of their old systems and bring them onto our systems. That provided a number of things. So from an IT perspective, we're always looking again at cost, capability. Anytime you have multiple systems in the environment, there's a tremendous amount of cost involved with that. You have to have people that understand those systems, people that can manage those systems, people that know how to operate and work them, maintain this infrastructure underneath of it. So we made the decision after about the second practice that when we would bring a practice on board, we would switch them entirely onto our systems. That created a tremendous amount of efficiency from the perspective of, we had subject matter experts that could move in, train everybody on how to move onto our systems. It created efficiencies within the policy and process perspective, because everybody then would move into to the policies and processes that we knew were efficient. And then from an analytics perspective, immediately all of the data that we relied on from an operational perspective was there, present, and ready. So it made things significantly easier. And honestly, the biggest area of problem that we had was the call center. And the reason why is because Rothman operated off of a centralized call center, and many of the practices had developed relationships with the patients. And so the patients knew that they could just call the practice quickly, get through, they could talk with their nurse or whomever. And that was a challenge because it became much more difficult going through the centralized call center. So we eventually developed a model where we would have our main call center using our 800 number. And then at least for the first year or 2 years, we would develop a more localized call center just for that practice. And there were a lot of reasons for that. Probably the biggest one was phone numbers. Everybody uses cell phone numbers now. And if somebody's doing an outbound call from a doctor's office or what have you, if they don't recognize that number or at least see that it's a local number to them, they won't answer the call. So we were losing a lot of patients and a lot of interactions, a lot of time, a lot of efficiency, because the telephone number was a main 800 number as opposed to a localized number. And since the patients weren't familiar with that, they simply wouldn't answer the call. So by developing those localized call centers, it significantly helped the practice integrate over the first couple of years.
Okay. I want to switch over to strategy for a second and ask the question, how do you think about IT, business intelligence, the entire spectrum of IT and data in the context of strategic discussions in your organization?
Well, at Rothman and Practice Management Partners, specifically those two, data pretty much ran the organization. So we quickly realized that there were no systems that would be able to support the analytics needs that we had. So at Practice Management Systems, for example, we started off with all of the practices would remain on their own systems. Again, inefficient from a people perspective, and it just became very difficult to get data. So we spent a lot of time building what we called the black box. So we were able to ingest the information from the practices, whether that was billing information, visit information, all of that, and create a package. And we had an account manager for each practice that would then meet with the practice on a monthly basis and go over those numbers. The problem with it was the data was disparate from the different systems. And so it became very difficult for us to manage and determine where problems were, whether that was in the system, whether it was in the data or in the operations. And so we decided that it was going to be better to bring everybody onto a centralized platform. So we worked with GE Centricity at the time. And then we deployed that out to all the medical practices for free because it saved us so much money on the back end. And the key thing that gave us was consistent data. So regardless which practice it was deployed to, the data was always the same. The analytics were always the same. And so we were able to go in and really help the practice optimize everything from operations to billing, collecting, everything. So from my perspective, data is really the key to any medical practice. Now, most physicians are not business people. They want to deal with the patient, and that's great, but they need to have somebody who is going to manage and run the business, and data is what really provides the benefit there.
Because I really want to home in on this question of data and data analytics. So as I look at an MSO PPM, data analytics could impact any and every department. And so if I have a very weak analytics program, my first question is, which department first, which department last? Do you have a bias in terms of the sequencing of building data analytics solutions based on which department we're talking about, from RCM to finance to marketing, down to payer-related data, population health analytics, patient outcomes, and ultimately data impacting patient behavior, so patient-facing applications? Where do you start? Where do you finish?
Well, I think that that differs from practice to practice. So some practices are more efficient at rev cycle. Some are more efficient at other things. We began our journey with analytics with regards to physician outcomes. And the reason why is because Rothman specifically dealt a lot with trying to change their behavior of their physicians. And in bringing all the new physicians in, trying to get them up to speed with the quality that we had with the rest of the physicians. That was a key concern of the physicians when we decided that we were going to grow, was how do we ensure that the new physicians that come in are really at the same level as what we're doing. And so we began the analytics build specifically with the physicians in mind. We had a great tool that we had helped develop for gathering outcome information. And every patient that came in before they were seen by a physician, we collected Hoos and Coos and several other scores. Then if they were a candidate for surgery, we did it at the time of surgery. And then, for example, with a shoulder surgery, they would take that same series of questions at 3 months, 6 months, a year, and 2 years. And so we were able to quickly develop the outcomes, not just for patients, and be able to then say, you know, what kind of a patient is best for surgery and who's most likely to have reoccurring problems, but also from a physician perspective, to be able to say, this physician costs the least and has the best outcomes in the shortest period of time. So how do we take these other outliers and train them based on this one physician and how he does things? And so it quickly allowed them to optimize the operations from a physician perspective, which then optimized the outcomes for the patients. And that's how they've built the reputation that they have of having incredible outcomes. And I'm personally a patient of Rothman, a little HIPAA exposure here. I had my shoulder replaced. And my shoulder had bothered me for 20 plus years. My shoulder is better than it ever was. In fact, it's better than the other shoulder. And I got to that point within 3 months of having my surgery. So it was a complete shoulder replacement. And the only way that came was by being able to watch and see what exercises, how much PT is required, what types of implants are needed, and how best to handle that. And here's a perfect example from a cost perspective. Most orthopedic practices, when you have a shoulder replacement or any kind of a replacement, they'll put you into physical therapy for whatever the maximum length that your insurance will take care of. I never went to any physical therapy whatsoever. Rothman, through this whole process of being able to evaluate the data, determined that physical therapy was insignificant in the overall outcomes. They gave me three exercises to do at home, five times a day. I did those, and I'm every bit as good as anybody could be. I have almost 100% utilization of my shoulder. So that's the kind of thing that comes from data. Now, from a priority perspective, you know, that kind of data was what was important to them. For a practice that may be struggling from a financial perspective, taking a look at the RCM may be the first step. So it's really individual based on each practice and what their needs are.
Understood. By the way, we should make a note to delete that reference to no PT when we send this out to physical therapists. But I mean, it's incredibly invaluable information here that you're sharing with us. The fact that Rothman was able to analyze its own data and modify its own preferred practice or a treatment program is really interesting. It sort of opens the door to a lot of groups that have enough scale in data to be able to form their own individual conclusions on clinical care, moving way beyond anecdotal individual by physician and moving towards something scientific, but nevertheless still proprietary, right? You can imagine how valuable that might become over time. Yeah. Going back to this question.
If I could just touch on another point with regards to that, We determined early on that that cost was a major factor. And as insurance companies continually came back trying to get us to cut our rates and to cut our reimbursements, we had to look for other areas in which to generate income. So one of the things that that we did was we worked out a shared savings program with our payers, so that if we could prove that we could save the insurance company's money in the short term, they wouldn't cut our reimbursement rates. So that led us down the path again from a data perspective. How do we keep the same quality for the patients, but be able to reduce the cost? So we started looking again to our analytics platform. You know, where are the costs with regards to every surgery? And what we found is that if we went to Thomas Jefferson, that a shoulder surgery would cost $40,000. And if we did it in our own specialty hospital, the cost was $20,000. Same doctor, same nurses, same implants, same everything, simply a difference in cost of location. And that was a huge revelation for us. So what we decided to do was then risk stratify all of our patients. So determine which patients can need to go to the high cost facility, and which patients can we shift over to the low cost facility. And we did that by creating a number of scores. So one was a social risk score and the other one was a medical risk score. So the social risk score, we would talk to the patient and find out, you know, do they have pets at home? Do they have rugs? Do they have their bathroom upstairs or is it downstairs? So all those social risks. And then from a medical perspective, what comorbidities do they have? You know, are they diabetic? Are they overweight? Are they on other medications? And then through our quality team, we generated a score for every patient. So when the physician met with the patient prior to surgery, they had the two scores there. And they could say, okay, you're a candidate to go to our lower cost facility, so we're going to send you over here. And that was a huge shift for the organization because the physicians had built relationships with the hospitals. They liked working there. But from a cost perspective, we were able to save literally millions of dollars a year. I think the outcome was somewhere in the neighborhood of about $10 to $12 million a year simply by shifting from one location to another. No other change, simply by doing that. So we were able to then approach the insurance companies and say, look, you know, we'll split this savings with you as long as you don't cut our rates. And they were more than happy to do that. And that's kind of the model that Rothman operates on now. Of course, it didn't make the hospitals very happy because we were pulling patients away from them.
Data analytics as a profit center, I think, is a wonderful goal to have in terms of creating the goodwill focused and fuel needed to really invest in it. And it doesn't happen without the investment. I wanna touch on the mechanics, the realities, the practical realities of introducing data analytics into an organization. So we spoke about, you know, which station you start at first, payer data versus RCM data versus marketing versus finance, versus patient-facing applications. In your experience, did you migrate from one department to the next over time? And as you did migrate, did you use the same team, same internal teams, same external teams? Or did you find that every department required its own unique experts and separate, independent individuals? How much complexity did you face as you went from a partial data-related business to a complete, comprehensive data-driven business?
So we began, like I said, with the physicians and what their outcomes were. And from there, it was, you know, after they saw the value of the data in that area, it was then beginning to look, okay, where else can we optimize? And again, Rothman is a very physician-specific and focused organization. And so rather than go to RevCycle, because they were making a lot of money, they had no problems from that perspective, they then shifted to operations. So all of our analytics then began to look at how much time are the physicians spending in operating rooms, how efficient are they from a patient perspective, when a patient comes in, how efficient are we at getting the patient checked in, into the room and ready to go. And analytics played a huge part there. One of the interesting things that Dr. Vaccaro did, he actually published a study on this. He found that if he could get to the operating room early in the morning, say 5:30 in the morning, that's when he began his day in the operating room, his ability to perform surgeries increased significantly. So he could do significantly more surgeries the earlier that he started. And the reason that we found was that when you're at a hospital specifically, as the day progresses, they get busier and busier. And so the time being pulled on those resources gets more intense. And so they don't have enough time to focus on getting the rooms prepped, cleaned, and ready for the next patient. So even something similar to, you know, just looking at from an operations perspective, how do they optimize? We were able to get information from the hospitals, pull that into our analytics systems, and then make some significant changes with regards to when physicians do the surgeries. So, you know, again, going back to from a priority perspective, their focus was on the physician. And then it was a very iterative process. So we started with the physician. How do we optimize the physicians? How do we optimize their time? Then we went to the operations team, and then from operations into X-ray, into to other areas. And actually, RCM was the last bucket that they tackled.
And Lance, did you use the same internal team, the same external teams to process and analyze this data, or did you use different individuals depending on whether you were focused on RCM data solutions or population health, patient outcome solutions?
Yeah, so the team that actually built the visualizations and built the database and worked on analyzing the data, those were the same group of people. But what we would do is we would bring in subject matter experts from each of the teams. So when we were talking about the physicians and what they needed, we would bring in several physicians and they would help us as we designed what was being shown. Because, you know, in our minds as data analysts, things that were important to us were not really that important to the physicians. You know, they didn't care about the way things looked. They just wanted the bare numbers and very specific numbers. As we moved into operations, it was important to bring in the subject matter experts. In our case, it was the office managers. How do we best assist them? You know, how do we bring in patients faster? So they told us the milestones of where things needed to be. Yeah. We built out a whole analytics platform around quality. So at that point, we brought in the subject matter expert of our quality director. And she laid out a great plan as far as what they needed to see, how they needed to see it. But the back end team always remained the same.
Got it. And and this is my last question. I want to open up to the rest of the group. The timeline involved in point A, you have nothing, and point Z, you've got a vibrant, dynamic, high satisfaction data program across every department in the organization was how long? Months, years, if years, how many years?
Well, I'd say that they're continuing to develop. I was there for 9 years, and they're still building out various areas and trying to understand the data that they have available. From a usable perspective, each what we called module, so for the physicians, quality, RCM, each module took probably 6 months to fine tune. And again, that was really based on the number of resources that they would give us, the amount of time that they had, and data. So, you know, data lags in the medical industry. So sometimes we would have to wait 4 to 6 months to get the right data to then begin to evaluate it and determine what we can and can't determine from that data. And so some of the modules would take 2 or 3 months, some would take 6 months to a year. But I would say that their analytics platform is continuing to evolve as data and the industry evolves.
Understood. All right. Opening up to the rest of the group. Does anyone have any questions for Lanza? Otherwise, I can keep going.
This is David Friend. I'd love to ask a question, Roy, if that's okay.
Hi, David. It's okay.
First of all, Lanza, that was a wonderful, wonderful talk. So thank you. So let me ask you a question. It's a couple part. There's estimates that you know, a quarter of medical spending is either worthless, not useful, dangerous. You know, your description about their analysis of the physical therapy in the shoulders, very interesting. So I was, why, it sounds like you guys did great work. Is it, why can't this kind of what you described, can this be packaged and then adopted broadly across, let's say, orthopedic practices or others? Or if not, why is medicine just slow to adopt what you've described, which to me is A, incredibly useful, brilliant, and seems almost commonsensical? Do you have any sense of, is this going to broadly be adopted rapidly? Is this very slow? You know, what's getting in the way of just broad adoption of this kind of thinking? Because it seems awfully compelling to me.
Yeah, and
I can answer that question. There aren't that many Lancers. There's only one Lancer. Well, he can only do so much at a time, David. asking Lancer to fix everyone's problems all over healthcare.
No, but you know what I'm saying? If you were Microsoft and you developed an operating system, you could then broadly, you know, get lots of people to use the system. You know, in other words, how do you scale it? You like that one, Roy? That's maybe my question.
I love it. I mean, we are launching scale data analytics. Actually, we just launched it. And so our mission is to help scale this across organizations. But you know, David, having worked with us many times, that what seems logical and versus what's deployed in a practical sense across thousands of organizations, there's usually a massive gap between A and B. And what are the reasons for that? Lack of time, lack of trust, lack of access to expertise and resources, failed experiments that delay successful experiments, in many cases, indefinitely, right? Overspending on IT, underspending on IT, implementing IT and seeing ill will as exactly as Lance has started, because physicians now have added burdens versus net negative or neutral burdens. The complexities of any one of these initiatives, you know, cloud-based data, there's so many ways to get this stuff wrong. What's refreshing, I think, is that Lancer, and I'm also refreshed, Lancer represents the side of this equation that gets it right. But we shouldn't lose sight of how rare that is and how difficult that is. Lancer, do you have any thoughts listening to David's questions? Why isn't everyone happy with their IT systems fully integrated and their data analytics fully built out?
Well, it's interesting. Rothman always went on the premise that they wanted to share the information. And so almost on a monthly basis, we would have other large practices come and visit us, everybody from Advent Health to other large hospital groups and hospital systems, other medical practices, and Rothman would spend an entire day hosting them and showing them all the secret sauce. So we'd show them all of our analytics, we'd talk to them about how we did things, how our operations worked, and when I first started there, I asked our CEO, you know, why are you willing to give up your secret sauce in all of this? And he said, because they can't implement it. And it was true. You know, we did over the course of the 9 years that I was there, you know, we did probably, you know, 50, 60 different demonstrations to large groups, spent days. They would come in and watch our physicians, and then they would leave and go back and never be able to make the change. And the reason why is they just didn't have it within their organization to be able to make that happen. Rothman was organized in a very unique way. For lack of a better term, a VP of the physicians, and he ran the physicians. And we had our administrative staff, who was run by our CEO, and he ran that. And by keeping those two separate and yet working together, we were able to accomplish a lot of amazing things, because the physicians drove the physicians and the administrative staff drove the administrative staff. And in most organizations, you don't have that ability. And so making change is very, very difficult. For us, we could come in one day and say, okay, and this is a great example. Our marketing person came in and said, based on the research that we've done, we can see that if somebody has a 4.5-star rating, that they are 5 times more likely to be chosen than the next comparable person. And so our goal at that point was then to take every physician and get them up to 4.5 stars at a minimum. And we track that on a monthly basis. We had our director and leadership team meetings. And in that meeting, we had the marketing team respond back where they were with that on an individual physician basis. So we knew at any point in time which physician was low, which physician was high, and not to say that we manipulated the numbers, but we did. So when a patient would come in, if they were having a great experience, we would hand them an iPad, click the button, have them log into any of the rating sites and have them give the positive ratings. And we informed the physicians about it. The physicians then began to drive it within themselves. And so within a period of about 8 months, we had the majority of all of our physicians, I think there were only two that were outliers. Everybody was a 4.5.
Lancer, I have a question about integration. So my impression of Rothman, and I guess you should confirm if I'm correct, is that it was, a series of acquisitions within a specific geography or a contiguous geography. And it was a clear sort of parent acquiring smaller tuck-in acquisitions along the way. We deal with a lot of organizations that are acquiring other platforms. So larger organizations with their own teams, infrastructure, histories, culture in different geographies. So it could be New York and New Mexico. How does IT strategy and the topic of IT integration change, if at all, if you're thinking about larger organizations with entrenched cultures and histories and established pre-existing teams that are sophisticated in and of themselves? And a sub question to that is, a key to data analytics that you mentioned was system standardization. Can you talk about, is there an option of getting to value add analytics without system standardization, or from your perspective, is that too high of a hill to climb, and it's unlikely to yield something valuable?
Sure. So from an IT perspective, anything can be accomplished given enough time and money. The question is do you want to expend the time and money to achieve that particular goal? So when we looked at it, integrating systems, again, every time you add a system to an organization, there's cost from a licensing perspective. There's a people cost for managing and maintaining that. And there's an infrastructure cost to be able to support that. Whether it's cloud-based or whatever, there's still a cost associated with it. So trying to be as efficient as possible, we had specific targets with regards to overhead. Our target as a business was no more than 32% overhead. So in order to achieve that, being able to just integrate systems really wasn't that feasible. You can take the data, you can transform it, you can bring it in, we could make it work. But the reality was, how much effort did you want to put on that versus do you want to be able to put that effort and those resources into building the business? So, it then becomes are you going to scale the business just to run the business, or are you going to use those resources to build it? And our choice was to build it. That did not come without some challenges, obviously. In meeting with the practices, that would require them to change significantly. Mostly from a staffing perspective, many of the practices that we met with had to completely change the way that they handled staff and the number of staff that they had. Each physician no longer got, 2 or 3 extenders. They had to be able to justify that. MAs were then shared across everybody. So from a cultural perspective and from a data perspective, it just became much easier to have everybody on the same physical platform, the same policy and process platform and the same data. Again, we could have done it differently, but every time we tried to, it was just far more expensive and more work than it was really worth in the long run. So as we evaluated a practice, they were able to come in and watch all of our physicians, see how everything happened, because we'd gone through it before. We could show them, these are all the changes you're going to have to make. Are you willing to make these changes? And again, you know, we left deals on the table, but everybody that came in 6 months later, everybody, every single person, every physician without question said it was the best decision that they'd ever made. They were making significantly more money, working less. Everything was much more efficient. They had more time to spend with their families. And really, from a medical practice, that's what drives growth, right? If the physician can make more money, not have to do any more work, and continue to grow, that's what's going to drive a practice.
It's really interesting. A healthy data program acts as a driver of conformity and not just a recipient of the benefits of conformity.
Yep.
Very interesting. Any more questions from the group?
Just a comment. I'm thinking back to last month with Alan Cooper and this month with Lancer. And, I love in each of these core MSO central services that both of you have highlighted, you know, taking or going from thinking of these divisions as functions and cost centers to really finding ways to support value enhancement across the organization. And I think it's pretty cool to listen to how broad your vantage point is across the organization. You know, I mean, a lot of the conversation today has been about operations, has been about payer strategy. We didn't get as much into RCM, but, you know, we didn't necessarily talk about, you know, IT infrastructure. We talked a lot about strategy across the organization, IT supporting that. So I think it's just a different perspective on the role and purpose of central services, which is nice to hear.
Yeah, good IT should be transparent to an organization. It should be an aid, not a hindrance. And that was one of the key things at Rothman. If it didn't add to the physician's ability to see patients, then there wasn't really any point in doing it.
But I think then this is Bobby Choi. I think so maybe to Roy's point, it's very nice to meet you. Very, very great talk. But you know, I don't think there are a whole lot of Lancers out there. When I think about a lot of smaller healthcare practices or businesses, maybe there's a VP of technology that I would call it. Maybe that's too generous a title of some of those folks. You have a lot of managed services providers masquerading to help out companies when their knowledge of healthcare data and actual healthcare practice transformation opportunities are very shallow. And these services, you know, just because they service Office 365 and provide Power BI doesn't mean that they're going to be any help on that. And then the pool of very talented, experienced healthcare IT, and I'll use that phrase lightly, healthcare technology and data veterans, there aren't as many out there as I think we think there are, especially for practices of maybe 1,500 providers and under. So I think that's something to recognize. There's an opportunity, but also there's frustration. I have frustration every day at smaller healthcare providers and their brother, sister in law, or their cousin in India, and the company that they have that is supporting them. And that's not all that there is in the world.
Yeah, Bobby, I would also compound that by saying that a lot of IT initiatives come with a large entry cost. And so they're not necessarily as organic and iterative and linear as you'd like them to be in a sort of high risk, high return context. You know, usually if you're embarking on something that presents high risk, high return, you at least want the first initial steps to be low cost as you climb your learning curve, as you're at the beginning stages of that learning curve. But if what you find is, you know, that first data point or experience point is very high on the y-axis, the y-axis being cost, it's a disincentive to experimentation. And so a lot of operators without IT expertise and their brother-in-law running, you know, computer functionality are looking at that y-axis and saying, you know, I can't afford to start with a heavy spend on the third party programmers who won't let me know whether the $100,000, the $500,000 that I've spent on X solution is of any value to me for at least the next 6 months, 12 months, while they're busy spending time, money, trying to provide a solution for me. And sort of that reality set faces, you know, many operators across the country. Lance, have you, in your experience with these solutions, have you seen a lot of high initial capital commitments or capital commitment requirements? Or have you been able to, with your expertise, start projects on a very small scale in order to maybe demonstrate to yourself on something untried, untested, that you can really break up value creation into increments? So versus log function or step function increments.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges that a lot of practices make is they go full force into things and invest a lot of money only to find out that it really didn't give return on investment. One of the things that I always do with every implementation, regardless how large or how small, is we do a proof of concept. So even something like at Rothman, we wanted to be able to have the physicians log into the EMRs quicker. And so we wanted to deploy the ability to have a card tap in, tap out. So, you know, we did it with a small group of physicians first. I think there were 15 from the different subspecialties. And what we found right off was they would leave their cards at home. And so we'd have to give them temporary cards, which meant we had to have the office manager have spares, which really then kind of did away with the whole benefit of security and everything else. So from a cost perspective, rather than spending $350,000 immediately and deploying this throughout the organization, we always do a proof of concept across a broad area. And we found out quickly that didn't work. So we then switched to something that they can't lose or can't leave at home, and that's their thumbprint. So they would simply walk in, use their thumb to touch a button, and then that would automatically log them into the computer. So that was much more widely adopted. The physicians thought that it was a much better solution long-term because they didn't have to worry about losing anything or forgetting anything. They didn't leave it over at the hospital when they just done surgery, and it improved their ability to log in. So from a security perspective, it helped us. From a speed in logging in, they were able to just put their thumbprint down, turn right to the patient, begin talking with them while the computer booted up. If that makes any sense.
Yep. Any last questions for Lance? I have one last question. Did you ever see any negative consequences of too much analytics? Any pushback from individuals, whether management related, administrative, or clinical, who found it to be too encroaching and argued that they were losing their ability to be more creative, experimental in certain aspects as a result of too much conformity? Did you ever see any signs of the organization losing its ability to make mistakes in an effort to try to experiment as a result of too much data gathering, analysis, and feedback?
Yeah, and that's an interesting perspective. Physicians, at least our physicians, were very, very competitive. So they always wanted to be the best. And so they had no problems with the data, other than the fact that sometimes it showed that they weren't the best. And then, you know, that drove them to become even better and work the next month to be higher on the list. So almost gamification of that. There were people who did not like the metrics that were being presented, but the majority of those were people who really were not doing what they should be doing. So physicians that were not having good outcomes that needed to have work done. They didn't appreciate it because it pointed out the fact that they were not doing as well as their counterparts, their peers. and ultimately they had to make a decision as an organization. You know, these people are outliers. They're not going to change. We need to get rid of them. And they would do that. They would get rid of physicians based on what their outcomes were. Overall, I think everybody appreciated the analytics, especially since it was the physicians that drove what was being seen. They were the subject matter experts on their particular data, revenue cycle, and everybody else. They were the subject matter experts, so they got to choose what was really important to them and to the organization. So I think overall, everybody really appreciated it. From a being able to make mistakes perspective, again, everything we did was always done in a proof of concept perspective. So for example, we wanted to increase our collections from the patients. So at the front desk, we implemented a couple of things into our kiosk that allowed us to identify which patients had an outstanding balance. They were required to pay that outstanding balance before they could be seen. So everything that we tried to do from that perspective, from an analytics or data gathering, it was all done with the existing systems. So we very seldom added anything new. We tried to pull from what was already there. Anything that was new, again, had to not be intrusive, not add any time to what the people were doing, especially the physicians. So I don't think that we had a lot of negativity with regards to it. Just a lot of performance improvement.
Okay. I want to thank you for your time today, Lance. It was incredibly educational, insightful, and enjoyable. So just really, really appreciate it, and really excited for what we're building together at scale in analytics and IT. So lots more to come. Thank you, everyone else, for dialing in.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate being here.